Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 126 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, just like every week, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ben Marez.
Hello.
And Casey, the babysitter of Bloodworth.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Are you feeling better?
I'm pretty woozy right now.
High? Is that the word?
I guess you could say I'm high.
You're not low.
Yeah, so I had emergency surgery on Wednesday to have my appendix removed. They said, their exact words were, so we don't really call this, like, what's the word that they used? Like, it's not like a casual surgery or a
routine?
Yeah, it's not a routine procedure. It's an emergency surgery, and you will be hurting and out of commission for a few days. So I was hurting, and as Casey and Austin and Manny will tell you, I was probably out of commission.
Very much so.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah, so, but I'm back, and we're joined this week by, you might notice that we sound a little different, we're doing an old school style with Matt Kling. What's up, Matt?
What's up, guys?
Yeah, it was really funny. So, you know, we had the podcast all ready to go, and I hear a knock at my door, and Casey and Matt are here. I was like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, Spencer, we're recording the podcast in 30 minutes. They're like, he forgot he's high as he can be. And I'm like, yeah, but we're doing it over Skype. And they're like, oh. It's like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So.
And then like 5 minutes later, Manny calls me. He's like, hey, I'm on my way. Have you guys eaten dinner?
Yeah.
It seems like, yeah, like the information that it was on Skype should have been more more easily.
Well, in all fairness, when Spencer was planning this podcast, it was like the day after his surgery, so he's probably like at his highest.
Also, I just said anytime that we have a guest on, we do it via Skype. Like, that was just a blanketed rule.
Yeah, that's true.
Certainly, I was never told that.
Well, right. But we're happy to have Matt here. If Matt's here, that means, as everybody knows, that means we're doing a podcast on one of the great decks of Magic history. And we're going to get into that. But before we do that, let's talk about our sponsor at Oasis Games. Our sponsor, you can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 5% off every order by using the code Would That Be Good?
All right, so we're doing our hashtag Always Improving. We're each going to tell you how we improved at Magic this week.
Or so, before we do that, we could talk about our Patreon at patreon.com/CCMTG.
Yeah, that's pretty big. We do love getting money, like probably more than a lot of things.
You can go on to Patreon. You can become a patron of our show. There's a lot of different reward tiers. We're really close to a few really exciting things. We've already got T-shirts out, tokens coming soon. And the more money that comes through that, the more things we can offer, the more content we can offer, you know, expanding our video and article library. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, every dollar we get, we use towards making this show better. Every cent helps. Every cent, you know, changes the show just a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, just everything is appreciated. So, yeah, like I said, check that out at patreon.com/CCMTG.
Yeah, and it helps us keep always improving, which brings us into our next section. Segment, hashtag always improving. Why don't you explain what that is, Manny?
All right, so always improving is our Twitter outreach program. You can tweet at us, you know, anytime. We'll answer your questions, talk to you, all that stuff.
So that's that would be good, and that's what that hashtag is called. Would that be good? So always improving is. It's something that we talk about every week.
It's okay. It's funny because he did this last time he was introducing the hashtag always improving segment.
Yeah, so
I don't use hashtags, so whenever I think hashtag, I just think of our Twitter outreach program.
Yeah,
so you're okay, dude.
Hashtag always improving is just, you know, it is something we put on Twitter. You can post on Twitter, you know, post it with your Would That Be Good? Explain, you know, this is something that you did to level up. And it's also the segment of the podcast where every week we talk about what we did to get a little bit better at Magic.
Right. So this week, I've been out of commission for, you know, for 5 days.
A couple days, yeah.
But today I played a ton of Magic. I watched a ton of Magic. I'm pretty sure we played Magic with Austin when he was here.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
But this week, something that I was trying to do was brew a lot more. You know, some of the decks that I looked at that I brewed were, I named them Wall on Drugs.
Sure.
You know, while I was brewing them in my Gogator's folder.
Was one of them just like, man, this feels great? Like,
no. Like, I made sure that, like, I wasn't loading up decks that I brewed, while on opiates later.
Oh, sure.
So I looked at some of the decks, but, you know, like, some things I found really interesting. I brewed Rug, Bug, Eldrazi. Just different things, looking at a ton of different deck lists. But one thing that I improved at this week is I tried to play a lot of decks that I know the team has been playing a ton of. Things like Jedi Jund and Grixis White, those decks, as well as some of the like the Collected Company decks. So I just wanted to stop playing things that people didn't have
it was off everyone's radar.
Yeah, well, I just, like, I feel like I already know how good Teamer Black is. Like, if I want to play that deck at a tournament, I can do that. But it doesn't help anybody around me, and, like, I don't get any feedback from anybody about the deck. So I'd rather, like, play something that people can give me feedback on and things like that. And I came to the conclusion after, you know, Matt Kling and Quentin Pierce, just how good that Jedi Jund-style deck is. Like, and it's, like, a deck that I'm very confident in playing moving forward. The other thing that I did this week that I'm going to be doing more of is taking notes. I'm going to, like, take detailed notes about, like, what decks I played against, what cards were good against me, things like that, and share them with my friends.
Very cool.
This last week at Magic, I sat down, and we all played, you know, rounds of Modo together, and I thought that was very fun and very informative. I feel like I got to really see how you guys view the game and how you process it, and I thought that was very helpful. I like that a lot. It was especially nice because my thought processes were not that far off from yours, and I feel like not too long ago that wasn't the case, so that was very nice. Another thing I decided to do is probably stop playing Black Red Dragons. I really liked this deck the last couple of weeks, but at my last PPTQ, I felt like I had very little control or interaction in my games, and it wasn't something that I was particularly striving for. I want to have more interactive games, whereas I can maybe pull games out because I have, I'd say, a better play skill than most of the average players, and I feel like in the earlier rounds, like, I can really bank on that. So I'm going to try and play decks that are more challenging.
Sure. Yeah, have an opportunity to outplay your opponent, right?
Right.
So there's certain decks where it doesn't matter how well you play, like, your win percentage is not correlated to your play.
Right.
Yeah, I feel, I am very interested in, like, the way Black Red Dragons has evolved from, like, even a month ago. I was looking at some of the lists.
It's very interesting. They're always changing quite a bit.
It's very different, and I feel like there's more synergies and things like that as the deck has gained popularity. I think it has become a better deck, but I don't like having my win percentage dependent so much upon drawing one card, and I don't like, and that's what I feel like Black Red Dragons has with Dragonlord Colgan.
Yeah. And it's
Storm's Fury.
Sorry, thank you.
And it's also just the payoff isn't quite there, right? It's a powerful card, and it will usually make you win, but it's not Goblin Charbelcher. It's not just game over when it shows up.
Right, there's a lot of times...
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, I mean, it can be.
Sometimes you just have no board state when you see it, you know, and it gets Disdainful Stroke, and that's all she wrote.
And it's a 5-5, whatever. It's like just a bad Thundermile Kite, which, like, is better than a lot of cards, but, like, it still leaves something to be desired sometimes.
What about you, Casey? What did you do to get better at Magic this week?
Well, it was something that occurred to me. I've been back in the gym for about the last week and a half, working out again, and I realized something that basically everybody wants to be in shape, but nobody wants to get in shape. And that's something that I realized that I was kind of doing in Magic. There are certain things, like, I wanted to understand certain ideas better, why people played certain ways, why people played certain decks. And you're never going to get that understanding without putting your nose to the grindstone and just trying to play the decks. So when I heard about people playing this Hardened Scales deck instead of just laughing it off, you know, I took it through the ringer, I played it, got my butt kicked for hours yesterday playing this deck. But I learned, you know, why, what the appeal is, like, why people play it, why, like, what would inspire somebody to play it, things like that. And I needed to do more things like that instead of just dismissing ideas, being willing to put in the work to address my weaknesses in Magic.
Matt, as somebody who, like, plays, just, like, just puts their face into Modo and doesn't leave for hours and hours on end, and you play tons of different decks while you're doing it, when you see a deck like Green White Hardened Scales, what do you do? Because it shows up on Modo like in 10 seconds after it shows up on air.
I mean, it certainly did. Actually, I've been playing against Hardened Scales for the last couple weeks, actually, so it's been even before the GP. Mostly I've been playing Four Color Rally online a lot lately, and that matchup's actually not that good. and I'm certainly not prepared to dismiss a deck based on any one thing. I think that you basically should, you know, give some kind of credit to ideas, especially if they're showing any amount of success. There's no reason to just outright dismiss something without even having given it any thought.
Right. But, like, do you jump on with those people to try them out, usually, or...?
It really depends. Oftentimes I will, but I didn't in the case of the Green-White Hardened Scales deck, although I do give that deck a lot more credit than most people did going into this weekend.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's go on to the power ranking. So, every week on the podcast, we break down a format, whether it's Standard, Legacy... Vintage, which we don't really do. I don't know if we've ever done it. We probably will one day.
Yeah, maybe a Vintage Champs later this year.
Yeah, something like that. Or Modern, we break it down. How do the points break down, and what are we doing here, Casey?
Well, basically, we look at the top 16 or 32 of whatever events we have for the format we're dealing with. In this case, it was the top 32 of the Legacy Open in Philadelphia. And we get 6 points for first place, 5 points for second place, 4 points for top four, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16, and 1 for top 32. Add up all the points, see what decks have risen to the top, which ones have performed the best, and give you the top 5.
Cool. So, coming in at 5th place today, we have Infect, coming in with 6 points. Matt, what does this Infect deck do in Legacy?
So, the Infect deck is kind of a combo deck. It oftentimes plays like a fish deck, is the way I would like to put it. It's basically just plays like a couple of threats and then tries to disrupt your opponent a bit. And then eventually if they don't play around it, you're just going to kill them out of nowhere. Semi-similar to Splinter Twin in Modern, honestly. But yeah, I think the combo is much more backdoor than people will expect it is.
Yeah, I think that, like, I don't know, I think of it like as a like hyper aggro deck. Kind of like, does that make sense? Like, when I think of Infect, it's like, it's combo-esque. It's like synergy aggro, because like, they kill you with creatures, and spells combined that have like basically are the. It's just like, imagine if all creatures ever printed had double strike, and that's kind of what you're playing against with.
Yeah, I mean it's similar to them playing like an Isamaru or whatever on turn one when they play Glistener Elf.
Right.
Yeah, it's just that it's so much better with Giant Growth than Isamaru.
Right. It also just turns every pump spell into, like,
yeah,
this insane thing. It definitely reminds me of more of Heroic than it does of, like, I don't know, some weird combo deck. Because it plays out much more like that.
I think it plays out a lot like that in Modern, but I think in Legacy, that is right, in that it's mostly, like, going to get in just chip shots, and then if you're tapped out, you're dead.
Where, yeah, it's a lot of times just, like, 1-1-1-1.
That's how it is in Modern too, isn't it?
Sometimes you play a lot more pump spells in Modern.
Well, and there's
like,
there's a lot of
the
game's
really
it's like a removal heavy.
Where in Legacy you're playing Brainstorms and Dazes and Force of Wills and, like, you know, in some cases like a Wasteland to crop rotate for, like, it's a much more interactive deck. Not like it's not Rug Delver where it's like trying to interact with every play you make.
Yeah, maybe, but I just haven't played the deck. I played against the deck a ton.
Sure.
In Legacy, I can honestly say that I've never cast an Invigorate in my life.
Man, you're missing out.
Well, I do think that a lot of the players that first pick up the deck too do start to play it that way, because, you know, they've seen it played that way in Modern or played it that way in Modern. But I think if you see people that have played Infect for a large amount of time in Legacy, you kind of stop playing it that way.
Yeah. If you watch the Tom Rosses and the Todd Andersons of the world, like, you would never even know it was a combo deck half the time.
All right. What is this deck's good and bad matchups, Matt?
Well, they say that it has a really good Miracles matchup. I'm like 0-5 against Miracles with this deck. But I know that's not, like, I mean, in my head, I realize that it can't be a bad matchup. Like, it's actually got to be a pretty good matchup. But, so that's one of the ones you're trying to hit. It's also got pretty reasonable matchups against a lot of the other slower combo decks, like Show and Tell. Your bad matchups would be anything with, like, a lot of removal in it. Like, Grixis Delver is a pretty bad matchup for you. Rug Delver to some extent, depending on what their sideboard looks like.
Sure.
Yeah, how many bolt effects they can really get up to.
I was going to say, like, any Punishing Jund style decks are probably...
Yeah, certainly those would be a bad matchup, but that's a little corner case, right? Because those decks aren't as popular.
Yeah, right now, I would guess that Sultai is still pretty good against you, though.
No, I actually think that's supposed to be a really good matchup for Infect.
Yeah.
It's supposed to have a pretty good matchup against the Abrupt Decay decks.
Really?
Yeah, because, like,
I can, most of my interactions with against the deck have been playing Shardless, and I'm pretty good against it.
I mean, Hamdotorak is going to be pretty good, but Ink Moth Nexus being so hard to interact with is really the hard
sure.
part.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because like they can just sit on their Invigorates and their Berserks until they're ready to go off with it.
You gotten a chance to play against this with Grixis Delver a lot?
I have not, no.
No? Well, we will rely on these two for the knowledge of that deck then. What comes in next, Manny?
Next on the list with 9 points is Miracles.
Casey, what is this deck? How does it win? Why do I hate it?
It makes you... I mean, you they think they win by you sitting at the table until you, like, want to die.
Right. Yeah, you win... It's a control deck, so you win by your opponent losing their will to live, or Jace the Mind Sculptor, whichever comes first. Sometimes, if you really need a quick win, you have Entreat the Angels to win out of nowhere.
I've, like, never seen that.
Yeah, it happens. but it's usually, like, you don't ever want to cast it. You cast it when you're under pressure. And then it's like on your end step, make 5 angels, kill you, undead
sure.
kill you. But it's a deck that wants to feed everything into their counterbalance Sensei's Divining Top soft lock, because a lot of things in Legacy have, you know, very similar 1 to 2 mana costs. So you're able to just, as long as you can keep a 1 and a 2 on top and keep plenty of open mana, like, it's really tough for your opponent to ever really resolve a spell.
Didn't the Jolisette version basically only win with Vendilion Click for a very long time?
Jolisette,
I mean,
actually...
They always had Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah, Jolisette actually plays the most aggressive version of Miracles. He plays, like, sometimes as many as 4 creatures. And, you know, Snapcaster Mages, Vendilion Collects, Vencers, things like that. He plays, like, Blue-White
wow,
Wizards
so
almost.
He's really trying to get there, like, eventually.
Yeah, he actually does play Cavern of Souls in the deck, too, which
yeah.
is pretty great in the mirror.
Yeah, it really... It's truly great in the mirror, because you really don't want to leave in any amount of, like, Swords to Plowshares, even knowing that he has, you know, this ridiculous 3-creature build.
Well, and he has Caracas to go with it, right? So
right.
it's like...
Yeah.
So it's really tough to kill the Vendilion Collects
yeah.
or the Vencers.
I think the majority of the time that I watched Jolisette play this deck, I think that Reed Duke talked about like how much he liked Vendilion Collects as the win con in this deck, too.
I think Reed Duke usually plays the creatureless version, has 0 creatures in his 75, just wants to like lock you out even further with Blood Moon, play more lands, and then just really grind you out.
So this, the when I'm talking about it was like when Reed got onto the deck, like
oh,
when,
sure,
during
sure.
the Blood Moon innovation time and
oh,
things
yeah,
like that.
Way back in the day.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, I think now like Miracles has I think become more streamlined again.
We see it pretty consistently in our power rankings.
Well, I mean, not just that. Like, I think that people just play more, I think that usually you'll see some number of Vendilion Collects and Entreats, and that just wasn't always the case.
Yeah, I mean, there were a time where there were 5 different Miracles decks, right? Like
right.
Anything from, like, Helm of Obedience combo
if,
to the Blue Wizards.
Yeah, if I were to write down a Miracles list, it would probably be within 4 cards of this 25th place deck by Jeremy Fionn. Like,
But even with that, like, the 5th place deck has Monastery Mentors and Snapcaster Mages in it.
Wow.
I mean, there is still variety, but you're right, it is settling down some. Almost everybody is playing a couple of creatures. Almost everybody... is playing Entreat the Angels.
So I think that the different variants of Miracles are not necessarily that one's better or worse, or even as much as playstyle. It's really just a metagame call. Like, as the metagame shifts, you can play more or less creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually do think it has a lot to do with playstyle. I wasn't really going to touch on it, but I think that, like, certain... Like, Jolisette is not a fast Magic player at all. Like, he's been known to go to time, like, with a lot of different decks, not just Miracles. So, like, having the beatdown strategy is actually important to his playstyle, where somebody who, like, is more comfortable playing much faster, making your top decisions much faster, it's not as important. Like,
I mean, I think that that's true to an extent, but I still think that there are times and places where each one can be better. I don't think it's necessarily,
oh, certainly,
like...
yeah.
I don't think you necessarily should just learn to play with creatures if you're going to go to time all the time. I think you should learn to play faster.
Certainly, but I do think that that does influence, like, playstyle does influence these last 4 or 5 cards a lot of the time, more than metagame, because Legacy, it's so tough to metagame.
I'm seeing something interesting. So I just looked at a few lists, and there seems to be this slot here, this one has 2 counterspells, and it seems that some people play 2 Flusterstorm counterspells or Spell Pierces. What would be the reason to ever play Spell Pierce in that slot in this deck?
Probably a little bit better in the mirror, because you want to be able to counter their Jace the Mind Sculptors, which Flusterstorm can't do.
It also can't counter Sensei's Divining Top, or, Sensei's Divining Top or Counterbalance.
I see.
Yep.
It seems like the counterspell version is the version that I would play, but
Well, the other factors in place are if you're running like Mentor's main deck or anything like that, you want your spells to be a little bit cheaper.
This one has Mentor and it's playing counterspell.
Interesting. See, if I were playing Mentor, I'd be more inclined to run things like Spell Pierce because you only want to interact on, you know, the earlier turns,
right,
oftentimes.
Rich Cowie's fourth place or fifth place deck list is playing counterspells and Mentors and Snapcaster Mages. So, like, he's got a full five creatures and two counterspells instead of playing any Spell Pierces.
How do you beat this deck? What's the combination of things that you need to beat it? Everybody knows that Shardless Bug is good against this deck, but, like, is that it? Is that the only deck that beats this deck? What keeps this deck in check?
Abrupt Decay is very strong against it. Lands is very strong against it because you can win the game without casting a spell, which gets well under the counterbalance trick. Like, they still have Swords of Plowshares.
It's a bit of a hype. Like, that's a bit hyperbole, right?
I mean, you don't always win the game without casting a spell, but you can, is what I'm saying. Like,
well, I mean, what are they going to do, right? Counter your Life Emblem?
Well, the problem with the matchup, actually, it is actually a favorable matchup for Miracles, especially post-board. Like, game one's a little bit rough, but post-board, you can easily lock them out of the game. Like, I mean, things like Rest in Peace and Blood Moon are obviously very good against that deck.
I feel like, if there was a reason that lands would be good against it, it's because it can get under their lock.
Well, so that's the thing, though, is you can't actually, for the most part, like, because if you set a counterbalance in play with a 3 on top, right, that's going to counter any Corrosive Grip things they have. And then you just switch it over to a 2 whenever they cast, like, Life from the Loam or Punching Fire. I mean, obviously it can get trickier, right, if they have,
well, this one plays, like, Molten Vortex.
Molten Vortex is interesting, but they're going to be warding in Wear Tears against you anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, because of your Mox Diamonds and Explorations and things like that. I mean, it's not a great... I think it is slightly favorable for Miracles, but the fact that it is so favorable at Game 1 probably, like, makes it gives you a reasonable shot. Whereas any really fast combo deck also...
Miracles is going to have a problem with really fast combo decks. Like, Storm is actually not that good of a matchup for Miracles, especially pre-board.
Yeah, which, like, intuitively you would think would be decent because everything in the deck costs 1 mana.
Right.
But in practice, like, so you don't always have, like, counterbalance, you don't always have top into counterbalance into, like, a Force of Will to survive that turn.
Right, that's the difficult part, too, is that oftentimes, like, even the turn you set down the counterbalance, like, unless you just have it on top already... you're just going to lose the turn that turn.
Right, exactly. And it's so easy for them to test the waters with a probe or a duress or something, so you're not really getting much out of them.
Cool. Coming in at, you know, number three, we have lands coming with 10 points. I know that, Matt, you once said this was the hardest deck you've ever played.
I don't think that I said that about lands. I mean, it is a very difficult deck to play, but...
You did say that about lands when the deck was kind of new. I think it's a little bit... It's not
yeah,
as,
I think
like,
I was
it's
playing,
not as weird. As
I was playing
it,
a very interesting
that.
Version, I think, yeah, when that happened. I was playing, like, Intuitions and a bunch of other different things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that version was a lot worse.
Well, what is this deck? Why don't you explain it to the listeners who aren't as familiar with Legacy or this deck?
Certainly. So lands is basically a deck that's going to try to kill you with mostly lands. They play, you know, somewhere in the area of, like... 40 lands, something like that, right?
I don't think it's that high anymore.
This one plays 34.
34, sure. So they play mostly lands. It's going to play Life from the Loam Engine to generate card advantage.
Crop Rotation.
Punishing Buyer as well to generate card advantage. And most of the time they win with a Merit Liege token off of copying their Dark Depths with a Thespian Stage.
Okay. Casey, what are the matchups like for this deck? What would entice you to play this deck?
I mean, having things like Tabernacle at Pendril Vale and Maze of Ith were really good at locking out creatures, and the Punishing Fire versions are even better than that at locking out creatures. You just basically never play against a creature for the whole match.
Yeah, playing Delver against lands just feels like my worst nightmare ever.
Right, and like decks like Jund and Shardless, like, it's really tough for them to outgrind this deck because everything keeps coming back.
Actually never played against this deck, ever.
Keep doing that.
Actually, not one time.
It's not a very popular
nice.
Deck. But
it's very expensive to build.
Yeah,
the cards are hard to find.
Expensive deck.
Yeah, and for some reason, like, on Cockatrice, people don't tend to play it still, which is, you know, pretty nice. Because it's an extremely expensive deck. Like, Tabernacle at Pendril Vale is, like, $700. Like, there's a bunch of super expensive cards in this deck. So, it's not super common. You're not likely to play against this, like, if you have, like, a Legacy weekly tournament, something like that, at your local
right.
store.
So, to say, I've never played it again in an SCG, even, like, Legacy events, like, that we've done at Oasis, where we have, like, every deck proxied, like, people just
right.
don't pick it up.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it is a difficult. It is difficult to play. I mean, it's not something you can just pick up and just go.
Yeah. When the last time you played in a Legacy SCG, I don't think the lands was quite popular yet. Like, it was coming around, but it wasn't like. Now I think you would expect to play against it once in a tournament.
And I think the people who do play lands, and for obvious, you know, financial reasons, they like to play that deck a lot. Like, they're very familiar with it. They're very good with it. They know exactly what to do in most matchups.
Yeah. It's a deck that is basically, long story short, it's very good against fair decks for the most part, kind of bad against combo decks.
Yeah, coming in next, we have Grixis Delver. Manny, what is this deck? Why do you love it?
Well, it's the business, number one. You slam a Delver, and then you win. Or if that doesn't work for you, you play Delver, and then you play a Gurmag Angler, and then you win. It's amazing. I mean, you have some number of young pyros, just you have access to all of the best tempo cards in those colors, and they all come together beautifully.
So the green in this deck is basically non-existent anymore, right?
Yeah, it's just Deathrite Shaman activations, and like you almost never really
and Ancient Grudge out of the board.
Yeah. It's a very minor, like, green splash.
Yeah.
That's why people don't even
call it a green splash.
I mean, people, there have been other, like, four-color Delver decks where people play all kinds of things.
Yeah. You'll see, like, one Tropical Island in there or something.
I think most of these now currently, yeah, this deck has exactly one Tropical. So, like, and if it gets wastelanded, like, it's not a heartbreak.
I was gonna say, this is almost the same deck as it was before, just with, like, less Cabal Therapies. It's just, like, the other Grixis decks weren't really playing Deathrite Shaman for very, like, there was four-color Delver, and then there was Grixis Delver.
Right.
And now, I think they've just combined into a more streamlined, better version of the deck. I don't think that the green is very really necessary, and, like, you don't use that side of Deathrite Shaman very often.
No, very.
But Deathrite Shaman is still, like, insane in the deck.
Yeah, I really don't recall the versions that I've seen that were Grixis without the Deathrite Shamans, but that doesn't mean they didn't exist.
I think the very first...
Yeah, the very early versions didn't have Deathrite Shaman.
Someone... Who was it? It was somebody, like, an SCG grinder.
We actually... I think the last Power Rankings we did had a Grixis deck that was, like... That was Deathrite Shamanless.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That played four main deck Stifles.
Yeah, I feel like Deathrite Shaman brings a lot to the table for that deck.
Yeah, because certainly the first version of Grixis Delver that you and I were testing that you were interested in had four Deathrite Shamans, right?
It did, yeah.
I think it's correct.
I think it was, like, it was pretty quick in the evolution of the deck people started playing Deathrite Shaman, but the very first version was Deathrite Shamanless.
Hmm.
And then somebody decided, I think it was kind of funny, because it wasn't Deathrite Shaman that put people in green with their Grixis Delver decks. It was the Edric Spymaster of Trest. Like, random as a one of.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know,
yeah,
attack
young,
you, draw
the
my
young,
deck.
The Young Pyromancer, that card, Deathrite Shaman, Cabal Therapy deck.
Yeah. And
Canon Grace played it at an SCG that
yeah.
he said he loved the deck quite a bit. I know the deck was popular in other places.
Yeah.
I think Deathrite Shaman is just, like, huge in this deck. I think the Gurmag Angler is huge. This is, like, basically the only Delver deck that I would consider playing.
I mean, I think Rug is always still a great variant.
I would never play that deck, though. I didn't say that it's the only good version.
I said it's the only one
that I would play.
I see.
Sure. It was the best version by far this week, as far as performance. This is actually one of the Delver decks that I don't really like to play. I don't like to play Delver and Deathrite Shaman together. I feel like it gives you an awkward game plan. But they're both very powerful cards, and I think that, like, if you're okay with switching gears on the fly to accommodate that, like, it's a powerful deck to play.
Matt, how happy are you to play a deck with 4 Ponder, 4 Brainstorm, 4 Gitax and Probes? Does it make you feel good about life?
It really does. I mean, it makes you really in control of your own destiny, which is nice.
Yeah, I like a lot of things about this deck. Specifically this first place deck list. Or, sorry, second place. It is actually first place. He actually did win the event.
Yeah, it just hasn't updated on SCG yet.
But Noah Walker's first place list is... I would consider playing this exact 75. I thought his Belfast tricks out of the boards were sweet. I love this deck, and I would totally consider playing it. So, coming in at number one, you know, the long standby in Legacy, Eldrazi. What?
It's a classic, really.
Yeah, at this point in Magic, you just say that, you know, it's been around years.
This is a creature type that's, like, not ever going to go anywhere. Sadly.
Well, so my question is, so this week it put up, what was it, 7 of the top 32, correct?
Yes.
So that's like a pretty staggering percentage. That's like 25% almost. And there's basically no way that it was 25% of the field.
There was actually only 8 of them going into day 2.
Oh, wild.
Sure. So what? 7 of those 8 made top 32.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many people were in day 32? I think it, or day 2. I think it was 64.
I can look really quick.
For these SUGs. So that means like they finish well above average.
Oh, yeah. Far above average.
Let me go to the both of these pages. So for the day 2 metagame breakdown, it says that there were 64 players, and I'm sorry, 9 of them were on colorless Eldrazi.
Still, very, very high win percentages for those players.
Yeah, to convert 9 out of 64 into 7 out of 32 is insane.
Yeah. So my question is, though, so we've already, I think we can all safely agree that Eldrazi is too powerful for Modern, right, and should be banned. It's pretty easy to envision a scenario where Eldrazi becomes not good enough in Modern, right? You just ban the Temple or the Eye or whichever, and it's probably fine. Let's say that this deck becomes too powerful in Legacy. Where do you start with the bannings?
So, I actually don't think this should be banned in either format. I've already done an entire podcast on Make Modern Great Again. They should start with unbannings and bring the power level up to Modern, because I think we will see this in Legacy, that Legacy is a self-correcting format because the power level is so high. And because, like, there are such a large pool of cards. The problem with Modern is they've, like, weakened all of the strong strategies. They've just done so much. I mean, even something as simply as banning Ponder and Preordain makes it hard for blue decks to compete against something. So that, like, they can, like, find their answers. Birthing Pod decks, like, they could play Silver Bullets and they could warp their deck to beat these decks. Jund decks could, like they were just have these solid game plans. And, like, they just, like, everything that they've done to, like, take decks out of Modern has made it so that if they ever print something strong, it just becomes the best deck because the power level of Modern has dropped so much.
I agree with mostly what you're saying. I'm gonna ask though, have you played a little bit of the Eldrazi deck in Modern, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How many cards do you think that they would have to unban to make that card a contender instead of the dominant presence?
Well, I mean, apparently it has a terrible matchup against both Splendor Dwen and against
The matchup against Splinter Twin didn't look terrible. It was about 50-50. And that was with the version that wasn't the blue-white version playing Path to Exiles and everything. I would assume that matchup was probably slightly favorable for the Eldrazi deck. The Bloom deck was terrible, though, in fairness.
Yeah.
That matchup was like virtually unwinnable with the way that the deck was constructed at the time.
So I would say that, I mean, I feel like in Legacy specifically, like, I was all about the banning of Trunin Nemesis. I was like, this card ruined Legacy. It needs to go.
And then by the time you'd finished that speech, it was no longer in the meta.
No, I mean, like, Miracles is now the monster it is because of Trunin Nemesis, right? But I don't know. Like, I think that Legacy will fix itself. And I think that the way to fix Modern is actually just to unban a ton of cards.
You may be right. I mean, I do have faith in Legacy's ability to fix this situation, but, you know.
I don't know, I'm on the fence about this in Modern specifically, because I just played Blue-White Eldrazi for the first time, yesterday or the day before, and it felt insane. It felt
I played it the day that Matt made it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it felt better than any deck I've ever played in Modern, like, as far as just power level against versus what I was playing against. So, like, it would have to be, like, some real hardcore stuff to make other decks contend with it. I don't feel like a fair deck will ever contend with it.
Yeah, if I were to ban anything from, I mean,
the problem with unbannings is that if we make unbannings in the wrong way, then we end up with everybody just taking their glass cannons and firing at each other, right, and see who wins. And that's not going to make for a fun format.
I don't think that, like, unbanning Jund and Breathing Pod does that, though.
I don't think that does either, but I don't know that those decks
can compete.
And I don't think
creating a blue control deck or even Splinter Twin does that either.
Certainly Splinter Twin doesn't. I don't know that you could create a blue control deck, though, that has a reasonable matchup against these things. Especially if the format ends up being that torn, right? Like, where you got, like, Jund on one side, you have this Twin deck on the other side, this Eldrazi deck on the other, this Birthing Pod deck here.
Yeah, I mean,
how could you possibly build a control deck to beat all those?
Well, we were just talking on the way here about how we think that the Eldrazi deck in Legacy probably has a bad Miracles matchup, right? So, like, an unbanning of Sensei's Divining Top, like, probably makes that a deck in Modern, right?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, with counterbalance in the format, but yeah, I mean, that would certainly do it, but that seems like it opens up a whole new can of worms.
It's a can of worms. That's yeah. Right. Like, Rite of Flame and Seething Song go a long way, too, but, like, that's probably
the
can of worms.
Rite of Flame is probably not the right way to go. The Seething Song probably gets unbanned with all the other cards that we talked about. Anyway, I don't know. Like, the fact that Eldrazi Mimic is seeing, Legacy play is like...
Well, so let's talk about this Eldrazi deck in Legacy a little bit. So it's basically just a variant of the old Stompy decks that we've seen before. You know, like, this shell has been played out hundreds of different variations.
This deck looks nothing like those decks. This deck looks like a clone of the Channel Fireball deck.
Well, it's like, it's got, like, Thorn of Amethyst and Chalice of the Voids, right? Like, it's...
Trinispheres on the sideboard, right?
Yeah.
No Trinispheres. Sphere of Resistances, though.
Sphere of Resistance, yeah. So it's the same, like, soul land and Chalice of the Void plan that we've seen in the past. The difference is your finishers are just much better, right? Your finishers are a lot more powerful in the form of, like, Thought Not Seer, which is also Disruption, and, like, Reality Smasher, which is just incredibly hard to deal with. It's a lot better than, like, Mog Catchers and Goblin Realmmasters and those things, right?
Steel Hellkites.
Yeah, and Steel Hellkites and
garbage
just
like that.
Mono nonsense. But I that being said, I felt like the Stompy shells have always been very good. Like, I think that playing Chalice of the Voids and Thorn of Amethyst and things like that are, you know, like, Stax has been just very powerful in every format where it's been played. It's just, it's really hard to actually prevent your opponent from winning the game till turn 90, you know? But this, a deck like this only really has to prevent your opponent from casting spells till turn 5, which seems fairly reasonable.
Very true.
Well, so you think that it might need to get banned?
I think that there's a chance. I mean, it's something that I'm willing to look into more before I make any rash decisions, but, I mean, the track record for the deck right now is very high. I mean, there were probably a fair amount of really good players playing the deck. Like, obviously, Jerry Thompson, a fantastic Magic player. He's probably going to do well with most decks anyway.
Yeah, he got his 20th Open Top 8 this week, so...
Right. So, it's not something that I would... I'm not calling for the banning right now, don't get me wrong. I was just saying, like, in a hypothetical world where the Eldrazi deck does become too good... Is there even a card that they could ban from it? Like, I think it would take at least 2, maybe 3 cards. It's so redundant, that's the thing. Like, unless you just ban, like, Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher.
I don't like the fact that Wizards is, like, printing these really sweet Magic cards, like Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, and then just banning them 3 months later. I don't enjoy it. I think that it's, like, leaves a horrible taste in my mouth.
Well, so the reason that that's happening is because they're not printing these cards for Eternal formats, you know what I mean?
But...
So you're just saying, like, before, you wish there was some kind of a stopgap measure, right? Where they're like, hey, let's see what this card
will
do.
That's why my plan of, like, have 5 people whose job it is at Wizards is to, like...
I mean, you'd probably be okay with 2. Just 2 guys doing that.
Here's the question, though.
Start with 1.
Hold on.
You can't start with 1.
Is it actually worse to have these cards banned in Legacy and be fun to play with and, like, reasonably good in Standard? Or is it worse to just have them be bad in every format?
No, I'm saying that I just think that if I'm with the Coast, like, I don't expect this to affect Modern or Legacy this way. Like, I think we're taking one little event and then blowing this out of proportion if we're already talking about bannings.
But it's something that's probably going to snowball, right?
Possibly.
Knowing the Magic players, there are... I mean, I haven't checked Twitter today, but I'm sure that they're
already calling
for bannings.
Like, Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch, right? Where these Eldrazi decks just dominated. So that's, like, very much what they're doing now in the meta everywhere. Like, all over the planet, Eldrazi are crushing everything.
It's tough to say. I do think that...
And that's what they do. They're Eldrazi.
Yeah, they're...
So, Legacy is... extreme. Like, I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts that there is somebody in the middle of 5-0-ing a league right now with some moat deck in Legacy that is just crushing these Eldrazi decks. So, like, there's just, like... There's so many options in Legacy. I'd be surprised if little old Reality Smasher was enough to, like, warp the format. But
that's my thought, too.
It wouldn't, like... impossible.
If I were to start somewhere in Legacy, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have access
to
things.
It looked dog-awful when Jerry was playing in the finals. Like, his deck looked bad.
Interesting. I saw Jerry play one match today, and it looked very good. Or, it was yesterday. It looked very good in that particular match, but I did see somebody else playing it where it looked awful, so...
Yeah, it looks like... I don't know. Like, we'll see. I have been known to open my mouth and say stupid things, and I just don't want to do that this time, and I don't know. If I were to start somewhere, it would be with Eldrazi Temple in Legacy, rather than Iavugan in Legacy, because Temple has, like, the real mono upside in Legacy, as you can play multiple, like, all the other soul lands have drawbacks.
So this is actually where I differ, because I agree that I think Temple should be banned in Modern, honestly, because you can't draw, like, 2 Iavugans and have it be good. But I think in Legacy you can draw, like, Iavugan in any one of your other 8 soul lands, and then it's just busted.
Sure. I mean, the decks don't even play 4-5 Ugins in Legacy.
Right, yeah, I understand. I mean, they would, though, right, if they had Eldrazi Temple banned, I assumed.
Yeah, I mean, I would start with Temple if I was going to start somewhere, but I just don't, I don't like that mindset. I don't want to, like, go too far into that.
Right, no, I agree. I'm, like I said, I'm certainly not calling for the bannings. I was just, it was more like a thought experiment. Like,
sure.
What do you think it would take to make the deck bad if it were too good?
I think, in Modern, I think you should I would just unban a lot of things. I've actually heard people say that the no ban list Modern is actually just a great format. Like, people have been playing it and talking about it on Twitter. They said that Dredge is a little too good.
Interesting.
Which is interesting, because I don't know how you win. Because you don't have...
We get Dredge Return, right? That's the card that's banned right now that matters.
Yeah. So you just play, like...
How do you win?
Grizzlebrand.
Oh, sure.
Wayne Kinsella?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably some combination of those two, yeah.
Sure. But yeah, I would say that, like... Something like Ancestral Visions, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Ponder, Preordain. I probably wouldn't unban Mental Misstep.
That feels like more of a bigger problem than a solution.
Yeah.
Because like that's how I would start.
I would start with unbannings first. I don't actually see a problem with because like here's the thing is I don't like Wizard's Argument. Like all of us thought Wizard's Argument for banning Wild Nicaragua was one of the dumbest things. Right, like, oh, we want people to play more green one drops, and it's like, well,
which ones?
Now no one's gonna play any green one drops. We want people to play more diversified four drops in Jund, so we're banning Blood Raid Elf. Well, now Jund doesn't see play, and when it did, like, people just played like,
you just stopped playing four drops
just,
for the most part.
Yeah, just
like...
stopped playing four drops altogether, and so I don't like their argument that we want to diversify the format by banning things. In big formats. And I think that we've seen that it doesn't work. But we have seen when they unban Lantax, the Lantax changed the format for a couple weeks in Legacy.
I wouldn't say changed the format, but it definitely got some time in the...
Yeah, it got some time, and like, I don't know. I just think that like all the times I've seen unbannings, it's been more helpful than the bannings have been. And I will say that the only time that I like really enjoyed bannings, we'll get into during our next segment. So, let's go into what we play and why, and then we can get into our training grounds. So for me, I'm on Jedi Jund in Standard. I have a list that I have kind of combined the things that I liked from what I've seen from Quentin and the decks that are doing really good on Modo. Jedi Jund is like the best deck on Modo right now also.
Do people know what you're talking about when you say Jedi Jund? I know we do because we've heard you refer to it as that a bunch of times.
Yeah, he's just talking about Abzan Red.
Yeah, I mean, Mardu Green, right?
I mean, that's the thing is that everybody calls it something else, and... Like,
I think
everybody.
We need some kind of standardized like system for this nonsense.
You
I can't
Rhino
I can't
deck,
take
right?
it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't have that many Crackling Dooms in it. It only has two.
Oh,
but
you were
yeah.
playing Mardu Charm, which I think crosses the threshold into
what?
You can't call it not Mardu.
What? Well, you play Abzan Charm in the Mardu Green.
Oh my
deck,
gosh, let's not have a 10-minute conversation about the name of this deck.
Mardu
it's
Green.
It's four color and no blue.
All right, that's so much better than everything else.
Mid-range deck, I've really been enjoying it. The reason that I'm enjoying it, and this is what I kind of, when I was deciding like what deck I wanted to play that other people were playing that I could gain some knowledge of, the things that I wrote down are like, what are the best cards that you've playtested recently? And my answers were Roast and Chandra. Those two cards have just been really good lately. Kalidus is another one. And then I was like, okay, so what are my options? I thought about Jeskai Black for a little while, and then I was like, you know, I just haven't played enough Seadrino. And Seadrino is also really good with Chandra.
Seadrino is also just really good.
Really good. And Goblin Dark Dwellers was way better in this deck than the other decks that I tested it in. And yeah, I've been really impressed with everything. I started off with four Crackling Dooms, and man, that card is just like not as good right now as it was like 3 months ago.
Yeah, with less Abzan in the format, it is worse. It's like, it's pretty poor against Rally and great against Abzan, which
yeah.
is like, was much more relevant 5 weeks ago. I agree. I think this deck is pretty well positioned. I don't know exactly, like, the right configuration of removal,
yeah.
but I do think it's a very good deck.
My starting point was actually a Modo decklist that I saw that had no Anathenzas, and I really liked that.
Really?
Yeah, and so that's the starting point I went off of. Playing a couple more creatures than them. I do like that Quentin was playing Soulfire Grandmaster for a little while there. I don't know if he still is, but I really enjoyed the card, and it's in my deck.
Yeah, I've been pretty over still Fire Grand Master in the deck, honestly. I switched those out for Sylvan Advocates, and I've been pretty happy with those.
Oh, I have four Sylvan Advocates already.
Oh, and some number of Soulfires?
I have two Soulfires, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I had in the list that I was playing also. Not the list we were playing yesterday, but the list I've been playing online. And I think it's pretty good. This is a deck that I would heavily consider. I would play probably either this or Rally. Or, you know, if I can find something else, literally anything else. But I think
Chandra's,
both of these decks are really good.
Chandra's, like, actually just great.
Very true.
So, yeah.
What was the deck Quentin Pierce was playing at the last PPTQ?
This deck.
That's what I'm playing.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
Yeah, I'm all about Jelly Jund right now.
Should I play the main deck Hollowed Moonlights to get Matt Kling over here?
No, Quentin decided those were terrible. I told him before the tournament they were terrible, but he didn't want to listen to me.
Yeah, I'm not.
And now
that.
Nobody does that, so.
Yeah.
Matt,
oh, but you were playing scared of him yesterday when we were playing Rally Online. You were like, well, he might have the main deck Hollowed Moonlight.
I mean, you gotta play. You play around it if you can. I mean, I would never play around it if it was gonna make me lose the game.
You'd never play around it game one, like a sane person. What?
No, I mean, I've had people main deck Hollowed Moonlight me multiple times. Like,
what?
I've,
who's doing this? Who are these people?
I don't. I had red. I had a red white tokens player that main deck Hollowed Moonlighted me on response to Rally and then died the very next turn to another Rally.
Oh.
So
well, you're on Rally right now, right, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think that one of my biggest flaws in Magic is that I switch decks too often. And I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to stick with Rally until rotation, so.
Cool. Well, do we want to talk about Modern Legacy? I'm on Blue-White Eldrazi in Modern.
I would be shocked if we weren't all on Blue-White Eldrazi, right?
Yeah, I'm boycotting Modern until, like, I have to play it this summer, but I'm, like, not looking at it, not thinking about it. Sad that I bought a playset of Tarmogoyfs like 2 months ago. Just like pretty much just ruining my life.
Yeah. I'm also still on Oops All Spells and Legacy for what it's worth. So.
Delver.
Yeah, I would probably play
it. It seems even better now, by the
way. Yeah. It seems really good, yeah.
Well, you might have a hard time beating a Chalice, right?
I don't know. Well,
would I?
I'm trying to think
can
of
you
one
win
that,
without casting a Dark Ritual?
You could. It should be really hard.
That's true. That's
Chalice on 0 seems unbeatable. Chalice on 1, maybe not.
Yeah, so what do you Chalice for in 0? That's what I'm curious about.
Because don't you have Lotus Petals and something you like actually need?
Yeah, you have Lotus Petals.
To start your chain.
You
maybe it's worse than I think.
What?
You have Spirit Guides.
Oh, that's true. So
it's
like,
not a lot to get you going.
There's a lot of Spirit Guides in that deck.
Yeah, there's like 8.
So like definitely two Chalices is literally unbeatable, right? Chalice on 0, Chalice on 1.
0-1 would be the end of the game.
But that's like, that beats almost everything that exists. Two Chalices, like, can't beat two Chalices isn't like a threshold.
But you also have Thorn of Amethyst, and I'm not sure that, like, you would have to really try to construct a draw that beats a Thorn of Amethyst as well.
Yeah, it could be, it actually could be worse for me, not better for me. I mean, I do get to win before they do all of that a lot of the time.
Yeah, if you're on the play,
it's
going to be good.
I would still be on Old Reliable, Rug Delver, or maybe Storm, just kind of on a similar token, like, try to get under them.
I have actually no idea what I would be playing in Legacy right now.
But it would probably involve Brainstorm?
I imagine it would
possibly not. Honestly, this colorless Eldrazi deck is looking pretty appealing.
You love Storm more than, like, most people love anything.
Yeah, I like Storm. I wouldn't say that Storm's my favorite deck or anything.
I wouldn't even say that he loves it as much as Casey.
Yeah, I think Casey likes Storm more than I do.
Do you?
Yeah, I would say so.
Does
he have like a Tendrils of Agony in his
pocket?
He
keeps grape shots
in his wallet.
Oh, that's really good.
Oh my gosh, that thing has gotten so much love.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just for good luck.
He's just got a grape shot, throwing it at Manny right now.
That's a true fact.
Well, let's go into this week. We brought Matt Kling here to talk about great decks through the ages this week. Talking about Splinter Twin.
You make him sound so old.
I mean, he's a historian.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you're like, yeah, he comes on for all the great decks of history podcasts. I'm like, I guess I'm like the magic historian.
That's what we invite
like,
you on for.
I feel like you should
excellent.
Have like a
that's
small set.
That was like literally, I was like, hey, you're
yeah.
like, I'm putting the podcast. I'm like, hey, but you have to come on for the great decks of history.
Yeah.
And you were like, yes.
Yeah, that's your job here.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm disagreeing to it or that shouldn't be my official title. I'm just learning this now. That's all.
I think officially to be any kind of historian, you are required to have some sort of mustache.
I was thinking more like,
dude,
like
when
tiny...
he grows his mustache, it's kind of weird looking.
I was thinking more like tiny, like wire rim bifocals that he's gonna pull out for this.
Yes.
All right. somebody ship Matt some bifocals. And let's talk about some Splinter Time. So, we're going to kind of go in order of things that happened with Splinter Twin. So, Splinter Twin was in standard for, what, 18 months?
Was it that long? Because New Phyrexia was in the
24?
Next set, so it should have only been like a year,
oh,
right?
Like, so, 9 months.
Right.
What?
Standard for 9 months.
So, Deceived Rexar was not in the same set.
I see. The combo was alive
right.
for that long.
And there was a Kiki-Jiki Pestermite modern deck.
Extended.
It was
extended.
Modern hadn't even been invented yet
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, I mean, I know that deck exists. I don't know that it was all that popular, though. Was it?
So I think it was more like rug mid-range variants in Modern, and then they would side in to some kind of Splinter Twin Kiki-Jiki thing. Like, they would have the combo in their sideboard a lot.
Huh. I don't know. It seemed like...
I think there was a Kiki-Jiki Pestermite deck in...
Because I know that Elves was, like, oppressive and extended in that era.
What? No, it wasn't.
No,
it was a lot of fairies.
What?
When Lorwyn was new?
Dude, this is way after that.
Yeah, this is far, far after that.
How long was...
Well, because we're obviously in New Phyrexia standard right now, right? Like,
the Pestermite Kiki-Jiki thing. Like, was that still happening? How long was Lorwyn and Kamigawa
Elves wasn't an extended deck when we were playing extended. Nobody was playing it. The extended decks were like Fae and Jund and Cobblade.
But people were playing Kiki-Jiki at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I guess Kamigawa was just an extended longer than I realized.
I don't think they were playing Kiki-Jiki. I think they were playing Splinter Twin.
Well, no.
In the extended.
Right, I'm saying, like,
they,
I know
they,
that...
They played a little bit of, like, right before the printing of Splinter Twin, like, the Kiki-Jiki Pestermite thing was an extended combo.
Right, I'm just like, how, like, did people, like, how played was that deck?
Not very played.
That's what I was saying. Like, how
it,
often was this Pestermite Kiki-Jiki thing actually happening?
Some number? But I don't know why this is a point. Why we're really in the conversation for that.
It was rare. It was rare, but not, like, not insanely rare.
Fair enough. I was just curious, that's all.
Okay. Anyway, so Splinter Twin existed in this world where the closest thing to ever happen to this combo was Pestermite Deceiver Exarch. I believe that there might have been a little bit of Splinter Twin. I don't even know that was an extended. Anyway, it was this very, very small thing that people knew about. I know that, like, Jesse from 60cards.com was probably the only person talking about it. So Deceiver Exarch gets printed. People talk about this combo, and the majority say this is, like, a 1/4 creature. This is stupid. Like, and you, like, have this bad enchantment in your deck. This will never be a thing. Well, in comes... Michael J. Flores. You know who Michael Flores is, Manny?
I hear the name all the time.
He is a Magic player that used to, like, write for... What was the magazine called? I mean, he used to write for Daily MTG, SEG.
Yeah, I don't know.
Huge.
He wrote for, like, Inquest, like, way back in the day?
I mean, he wrote for everything. He very big innovator in deck building.
Is he not active currently?
He currently does a podcast with Patrick Chapin called
Top Level
Podcast.
Does he still write for TCG Player?
I don't know.
He's around. He's
yeah. He top fourd the PPPDQ with me. He beat me in the Swiss with Mono Blue Dragons.
I think the point of this is that it would be very easy to find him if you Google.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway. So here's the deck list that he came up with. The Alexander actually won a PDQ with. 4 Deceiver Exarch, 2 Inferno Titan, 1 Pilgrim's Eye.
That's my
by far the most questionable part of the deck, yeah.
4 Seagate Oracle. Man, what I would give for Seagate Oracle in Standard right now. 2 Jace Belrin, 4 Jace the Mind Sculptor, 4 Into the Royal, 3 Mana Leak, 4 Preordain, 2 Spell Pierce, 4 Splinter Twin, and 26 lands. So it's like a blue-red control deck that for some reason he would ever consider putting a Splinter Twin on a Pilgrim's Eye to infinitely block things.
That's not true. That didn't happen.
That is literal. Alex said he did it at the PTQ.
Gross.
And so he wins a I want to say that it was an SEG Open with this. The next, that night, Julian Ontiveros, somebody who I playtested with back then, came to my house with it sleeved up, and we played until about 3 a.m., and I was playing Cobblade, and I could not beat him. Like, actually couldn't win. With the best deck in the format by, like, so much. It was crazy. Like, I could not win. Then there's some reasons for that. One of the reasons is I had not played against the combo before, and I just was like, all right, I'm just going to leave up this dismember, and then he's like, tap down your land, you're dead. You're going to leave up the skill pierce, tap down your land, you're dead. And it's like, it was crazy. And, like, if I didn't, like, do things like that, the deck just wasn't built at that time to even combat this combo. It wasn't built with it in mind. Like, you had things like Into the Royals in your deck, and like
just soft to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Cobblade decks of those times were playing like 4-day Judgments as removal, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Things like that. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, you had things like 5-mana Elspeth in your deck, and like or Gideon, like things.
Yeah, it was Gideon more.
Gideon.
I don't
like,
think Elspeth was printed yet.
So you literally just could not. You could not interact with the combo.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
At all.
Like you were dead to this deck. The deck. I obviously by the end of the night we had come up with a deck list that could beat this deck. But those who didn't put in the testing came to this awakening. After this though, this isn't the deck that took off. This isn't even the deck that abused it the most. There were Grixis variants that came out with like Inquisition of Kozilek and things like that to stop their make them discard cards before comboing off. But the deck that Matt will tell you, and that I would tell you, was the best version of this deck. That only got, I don't know, 30 seconds of sunlight.
Yeah, I think there was maybe only one SCG Open, maybe two at the most.
Ali Antrazi wins an SCG Open on 6/26/2011 with Twinblade. Deck has 4 Deceiver Exarch, 2 Myria Angels, 4 Stoneforge Mystic, 4 Jace the Mind Sculptor, 1 Batterskull, 1 Sword of Feast and Famine, 1 Sword of War and Peace, 3 Splinter Twin, 3 Dismember, 2 Dispel, 2 Into the Royal, 2 Spell Pierce, 4 Preordain.
Man, what a standard format. I want to play this deck really badly now.
This deck, nobody could beat it. Like, you had to, because they didn't have to tap out because they could activate their Stoneforge Mystic. If they did tap out, it was for Jace of the Mind Sculptor. And, like, if you tapped out against them, they just play Deceiver Exarch, put a Splinter Twin on it. Or they just put a Splinter Twin on there.
Yeah.
Stoneforge Mystic and got it.
This deck sounds more powerful than like a modern deck.
This is more powerful than modern deck.
Yeah. I mean,
there's
like, crazy.
There's literally
these cards are banned.
Yeah, yeah. Stoneforge Mystic, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and Splinter Twin are all banned.
And
Preordain.
My mind can't believe that you're telling me this was real.
This was a standard deck.
Yeah, I don't believe you. You're lying. You're lying to me. This is a joke. This is a sick joke on me because I don't know.
So after this tournament, both Stoneforge Mystic and Jace the Mind Sculptor got banned. So we move on to where to go to next. And there's two more standard decks that we're going to take a look at. One of them is the deck, like, probably my actual favorite deck ever. It's like up there, if not my actual favorite. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I mean, I just think that I wish I could go back and try that deck now that I have such a love for, you know, both of these cards.
So, we're going to talk about Twin Pod.
What? Pardon me?
So, this deck was 4 Lotus Cobra, my actual favorite Magic card of all time, 4 Nest Invader, 4 Birds of Paradise, 3 Deceiver Exarch, 2 Acidic Slime, I played 3 Vengevine, 1 Urbrask, 1 Phyrexian Metamorph, 1 Frost Titan, 1 Inferno Titan, 1 Wormcoil Engine, 3 Birthing Pod, 3 Splinter Twin, 4 Preordain. So this deck was a pod deck that played Deceiver Exarch and Splinter Twin.
It's just goes to show you how powerful Ponder or Preordain is, right? Like, people were playing in their Birthing Pod Splinter Twin decks. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah. I mean,
to be fair, like, you played Ponder in it. In Bant Pod and Rug Pod the next year, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying that type of effect. Like, you would never play Serum Visions in your Malaria Pod deck, right?
Oh, heck no.
Because that card's just not good.
Yeah. But so this deck was basically the same premise. It was like this very powerful mid-rangey deck with like Birthing Pod and Titans and Lotus Cobra that you could ramp with, and you know, these Nest Invader tokens that get left over, and then if they tap out against you, they die. This deck obviously evolved and became a staple of the format, evolving very differently from the deck that we have in front of us. This one stayed for months and months. You know, all kinds of different things came out of it as the Birthing Pod decks evolved. And then there was Straight Blue Red Twin, which Matt ended up playing. And the key card in this one that we were going to talk about is Shrine of Piercing Vision. Matt, do you remember what Shrine of Piercing Vision did?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, so it's two colorless for an artifact. Two generic, rather. and then at the beginning of each upkeep, or whenever you cast a blue spell, you can put a counter on it. Then you can sacrifice it to look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of counters on it, and then choose one of them and put it in your hand.
Yeah, and the card was called, I think Sam Black called it Demonic Tutor?
So it was definitely that, a lot of the time in that deck. oftentimes, by turn 5, you would have 16 counters on this thing.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Like, it was...
So, this deck list was 4 Deceiver Exarch, that's all of the creatures, 4 Ponder, 4 Preordain, 4 Gataxian Probe. one Mental Misstep, 4 Mana Leak, 2 Into the Royal, 3 Dispel, 2 Dismember, 4 Splinter Twin, 4 Shrine. This deck was like...
4 Shrine.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. The Shrine of Piercing Visions is definitely the, like, one of these is not like the other.
it was actually, like, probably the best card in this deck.
No, I agree. Like,
why does that no longer
see
play? Scry 16,
draw 1 is powerful.
Because you can have better dig spells now.
Okay.
And this deck played, you know, 12...
58 cantrips?
Yeah.
Right. 12 so, like, cantrips. So, you cast that on turn 2, then on turn 3, you're like, Ponder, Preordain, Jataxian Probe, Preordain. Like, that thing has a lot of counters on it all of a sudden.
Right.
Where, like, it's tough to, like, really go off like that in Modern, with just all blue spells.
Yeah, with Sleight of Hand and Serum Rituals.
Yeah, like, you can do it, it's just, why would you want to?
Yeah.
That card has certainly caused some bad beat stories, though. Like, I've had situations
yeah,
where I, like...
I think you had one for, like, 32 that missed.
No, I may have had that. I don't remember that one. But I think the worst one that I ever missed on was like one that was like 12, right? And I flashed into Deceiver Exarch end of turn, and I met like I have 3 lands in play, and I have the Twin in hand and everything, and I'm like, okay, pop it for 12, and did not hit a land in the top 12, and I was like,
what?
That seems so unlikely. Like,
but yeah, that card, like, so this is how Splinter Twin. These are 4 different decks, all of them standard decks. All of them we'd give a lot to play with in other formats at this point. 4 Ponder, 4 Preordain, 4 Gataxian Probe has Casey.
That's just a good time, yeah.
Blowing at the mouth.
That's just how you win games of Magic.
So, obviously, this deck rotates out. And it Modern becomes a format. And it becomes...
What year did Modern come around?
Well, we'll get into that as Splinter Twin won the first Modern Pro Tour.
2011.
it was... Oh, where is... Is it not sitting here? 2011 Pro Tour Philadelphia by someone named Samuel. And then this deck was a very different Modern list than we see, like, 2 months ago, right?
Yeah, no,
so,
9 days.
Yeah, I don't think you've ever actually played against it after this, Manny.
No, but interestingly enough, it only plays one Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
Which I think is really funny.
Yeah, well, that's because you would rather play Fire Spell in that format.
Sure.
So the deck is 4 Deceiver Exarch, 2
Kijiki,
3 Pestermite, 2 Spellskite, 2 Dispel, 1 Disrupting Shoal.
What? Sure. I mean, it's just a great card.
3 Fire Spell, 1 Lightning Bolt, 2 Pact of Negation, 4 Ponder, 4 Retained, 4 Remand, 1 Sleight of Hand, 4 Splinter Twin, 26 lands. Casey,
Man, 26 lands is kind of shocking in this deck, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of... I think the first Modern tournament that I played against Splinter Twin played much less lands, and it also played...
No, Spencer, this only plays 23 lands.
It plays 23,
lands.
Yeah, really
oh, 23 lands, I apologize.
Yeah. So, yeah, that makes way more sense.
Regardless, one of the things that I noticed about this is, like, the original renditions of this in Modern actually played things like Faithless Looting. And, Actually, that might have been right after the printing of Snapcaster Mage.
Well, it has to also be after the banning of
Ponder Snapcaster Mage
right?
was already legal in Modern. Was in Innistrad. And this was, like, Pro-Tour Innistrad, basically.
Oh, okay. So it was right after the bannings.
Yeah,
it had to be after,
like,
banning of Ponder and Preordain.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, there was no reason to play a tempo strategy when you could combo on turn four every time.
Yeah. So this deck wins the first Modern Pro-Tour. Splinter Twin has now got, like, been one of the most powerful strategies in, I believe it was, in fact, powerful and extended. I believe it actually was, like, the best deck in extended after Jace, because Jace was banned in that format also.
Yeah, Jace and Stoneforge both got banned in extended as well, at the same time as they did in standard.
Yeah. And so, it's now been the best deck in standard. Matt would say that blue-red was the best deck after the Jace bannings, right?
Yes.
And now it's won a Modern Pro Tour. Shortly after that, we get Ponder and Preordain are banned. And Jund becomes very good, and the deck kind of falls off, I would say. Until one day, some person decides... I actually don't know which is first. So is it Pro Tour Fate Reforged first, or is... It would be Pro Tour Fate Reforged stinks, right?
Pro Tour Born of the Gods is before that. But that one was not won by...
Well, the I just want to talk about this deck becoming invented.
Oh, sure.
And that's... We get innovations again in Rug Twin. So now people are adding Tarmogoyfs to their Splinter Twin decks. In case you, before the podcast, said that this is your favorite version of the deck.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because the best part about playing Splinter Twin is that your opponent is just in this impossible situation where it's like, I can't tap out because I'll die, and I can't not tap out because I'll die. Where, like, playing Tarmogoyf, like, really, like, drove the crux of that issue where, like, you're being attacked for four every turn. Like, you don't have that long to just sit around and do nothing. You can't just wait until you have all of it before you start casting spells. So I'm going to make you cast spells, and then I'm going to kill you with the combo. But, like, so often you would get in so much damage with your Tarmogoyf that they were just dead to bolt, Snapcaster Bolt by the time they decided to do anything.
Right.
And Remand really does so much work in that kind of situation where, you know,
yeah.
Turn three, terminate. Remand. Go. Just, like, you just got to keep laying it down.
Yeah, just keep down to, like, once you...
And dig you closer to your combo.
And that
exactly.
too, yeah.
You just got them coming and going with this deck, that it was just a lot of fun. It looks so bad on paper. Like, I thought when I saw the deck, I was like, this is a travesty. Like, I don't know why you'd ever play this. Like, your mana is just so much worse. Then I played the deck, and I realized that, like, nobody ever played around it, like, effectively, it felt like. So
When I played the deck,
it's the exact same theory as the Twin Blade deck,
right?
Like, it's literally just the bad version of that because we don't have Stoneforge Mystics.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought the Scavenging Ooze was, like, this thing that was crazy.
Yeah,
this version
the busted
deck.
Version of Tarmogoyf?
Yeah.
That's
what it always is.
Yeah, and I really like the Flame Slash for the Tarmogoyf Mirrors. It seems so good.
Yeah, this deck was just this innovation that's, like... I mean, we see it later, but we're going to do with, like, Grixis Twin and, like, all kinds of, Delver Twin and, like, all kinds of different things that people were doing to innovate with this deck in Modern. But I want to take a look at the deck from Pro Tour Fate Reforged that it won that Pro Tour and how different it is from the deck that won Pro Tour Philadelphia. We have 4 Dizzy Bear Exarch, 2 Pestermite, 3 Snapcaster, 2 Vendilion Click, 2 Cryptic, 1 Dispel, 2 Electrolyze, 1 Flame Slash, 4 Lightning Bolt, 1 Peak, 4 Remand, 4 Serum Visions, 2 Spell Snare, 4 Splinter Twin, 24 lands. What in the world? This is so different.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're, like, full on, like, almost in blue-red control territory with this deck, where, like, you're not, like, really going all in on the combo. You have plenty of ways to win without comboing.
Yeah.
You're a very interactive deck, really just, like, comfortable playing any role in any matchup.
Yeah, I mean, more than one person's died to those Vendilion clicks.
Oh, yeah,
they're so good.
So, is this a blue... This is just blue-red control with, like, this weird win condition, right, Matt?
It's more of a tempo deck than a control deck, I would say. You're certainly not trying to win in the very long game. And you're not going to be able to hold them off, you know, past turn 8 or so. But you certainly... You control the game enough to get in several chip shots with your... You know, with your mediocre beats, and then eventually, you know, if they tap out, you can kill them with the combo. If they don't, then you get to kill them with Snapcaster
and
Bolts.
In our last Modern testing, when we were testing this style of deck, like, how often did we just win with Burn?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, like, more than 50% for sure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, especially, like, towards the end of this Host Winter Twins time, like, people were winning with Keranos. people were playing, like, starting to even play Keranos in their main deck, like, alright, let's get comfortable, like, you gotta tap mana sometime, like, you're under the gun at this point.
Yeah, so let's move on to kind of just talking about, just kind of gave you guys a ton of deck lists, ton of information. Matt, what made Splinter Twin a great deck with so many different innovations? I mean, you put down here a huge percentage of it is people just not knowing their role.
Yeah, absolutely. We've brought this up a couple times now in talking about the different lists, but people just having this, when you just have this sphere of resistance on against them that they don't have against you, it's like...
For free. It's like a deck building, not even a deck building cost. It's like...
It was just like
the opposite of that. What's the opposite of a deck building?
It was this unexpected, at least for me, unexpected feature of the deck where, like, your opponent just never cast spells no matter how many they had in their hand.
We'll go to discard to hand size.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, turn three rolls around and they start just, you know, almost shutting down where they're like, "Welp, I knew it was going to end like this."
The other thing that made the deck really powerful and easy to innovate with is it's such an easy combo to just slot into just about anything, right? Like, it really doesn't take that much deck building cost.
Yeah, I played Volokut Twin.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's just so easy to just be like, Deceiver Exarch is like, it's a fine creature, whatever, and I'll throw in some Splinter Twins there and just get it.
Yeah,
we definitely rationalized our way into thinking that Deceiver Exarch is a fine creature. Right?
Well, I mean, like, I mean, this is something that I actually did. I just put the Splinter Twin combo into a Volokut deck.
Sure.
And then, like, I mean, Splinter Twin on a Primeval Titan literally wins the game in Volokut anyways, so...
Sure.
Yeah. And you would think that, like, back then, it's like, oh, it's... Haha, that's cute. But, like, that's basically what happened in Modern later on. I mean, we did it in Pog. We did it, like, everything... We did it in everything.
Right. I mean, it wasn't really a real deck, but, like, there was the deck that Austin Geltz was trying to play, like, the Collected Company into Deceiver Exarch,
And the
that was a deck that Jerry Thompson lost to on coverage.
Yeah, I mean
the Collected Company twin deck that like put in a
the Pilgrim and the Exarch untap. You're like, you know, use the Pilgrim to get the Splinter Twin untap, cast Splinter Twin, kill you. Where it's like, what just happened to me? Like, my opponent was playing some kind of green red like mana dork deck, and then I died to Splinter Twin. It was the weirdest thing I ever saw.
Yeah, I mean it was a minimal deck building cost to just have these things in your deck. And, you know, some people, you know, there were versions of the deck that were, like, Bounding Krasis, Tempo Twin decks that were, like, just Bounding Krasises, and... I mean, that deck could still exist, technically, if you just, like, wanted to play Pestermite and that, and then, like, some Kiki-Jikis and, like, some like, E-Witnesses. I mean, this deck sounds sweet. Like, there's just not a huge deck-building cost to doing it, and it just makes it impossible for your opponent to, like, play the game they want to play it. So what prompted the deck to evolve in Modern, or even Standard? And I think both of them, for me, bannings were huge. The metagame became a little bit better against the strict combo versions, with things like Abrupt Decay and Illness in the ranks being printed. But, I mean, metagames, you would think as the metagame changed, like, this deck would, like, fall in and out, but instead it just changed with it. And that's only true of great decks. It's not true of just every deck.
Yeah, I mean, this... deck was very adaptable. Like, it went from having Ponder and Preordain and like all these cards in it to, instead of like a deck like Storm really fell off quite a bit without those cards, Splinter Twin was able to just keep on trucking, right? Like, it took the actual banning of Splinter Twin to like get the card out of the format.
Yep. And I'm not even convinced that blue red Kiki Jiki is like the worst deck you could be playing in Modern.
I had a dream that it won that it won the Modern Pro Tour before the Modern Pro Tour. I thought it was super funny when I woke up.
Yes. That would have been hilarious. I mean, it wouldn't be unprecedented. I mean, semi for, like, a Pro Tour, right? But, like, I remember the banning of Cobblade. Like, they banned Stoneforge and Jace, and then Cobblade won the very next tournament.
Yeah,
like,
it was so funny. It was at a coffee shop watching poetry reading. And I get a text that's like, Cobblade just won the SCG. And I'm, like, laughed out loud during this poetry reading. And, like, everybody turns to me, and I'm like...
And it's about, like, famine or something.
I'm sure it was.
Like a huge jerk.
But yeah, like, there's just... The deck just kind of moved in and out, and I think that it has to do with that deck building cost that we talked about, like, this minimal thing that had to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you, like
you would
said,
think
the
playing
the
four
are...
bad enchantments and four bad creatures with, like...
More than four.
But the thing
like
is,
six.
Like, eight slots is just not that many to dedicate to something like this. Like, that's why you can play, like, a straight-up control deck or an all-in combo deck or basically anything in between, right?
Right, because these eight slots, and, like, they just give you so much flexibility that, like... It's only eight cards in your deck, but it's your opponent's entire deck has to play around it.
And, like, six sideboard cards.
Right. So you just, like...
Rending Volley. That was in everything that played red.
Yeah, people played red to play Rending Volley. Like,
yeah, you had to.
I mean, that is one sin to play Tarma Twin over something like Twin Blade, right? Is that, like, cards like Rending Volley and Combust or whatever? Don't play Tarma with.
Looks pretty silly.
So what was your favorite version of the deck? We'll start with you, Matt.
Twin Blade.
Twin Blade?
Yes.
Just, you gotta play Jace, Stoneforge, Mystic, and the combo?
Yeah, I mean, the combo was just, like, added value. I mean, Cobblade's my favorite version of everything. But if I can figure out a way to make this Eldrazi deck into Cobblade also, we're gonna get it.
Just go get Ghostfire Blades with your Stoneforge Mystic?
Yeah, I'll probably still get Umizawa's Jitte, but...
Yeah.
Casey?
For me, it would be Tarmo Twin, just kind of for the same reason. Like, if I'd ever played Twin Blade, I probably, you know, would like it, but I just... was before my time.
Yeah, for me, it was Twin Pod. Like, Lotus Cobra.
Oh my gosh, this card again.
Lotus Cobra, man. And Birthing Pod, like, I fell in love with... I think that's actually just why I didn't like Modern Pod, is because it was so different from this deck.
Right.
Like, it was this value deck. What?
I completely understand that feeling. That's why I could never play any of the Modern Twin decks or anything like that. I'm just like, this isn't what I'm used to.
Yeah,
I think I've heard you say Lotus Cobra every week. Like, just in life, being your friend for the last 2 years. I mean, how many times I've seen a human being play that card? Never. Not once. It can't be that good.
He doesn't even believe it exists.
Yeah, I don't... This isn't a real card.
It's a myth. You can turn one an Emrakul with Lotus Cobra.
Oh, well.
In standard,
well, then.
Yeah, in standard.
Oh, that's insane. My favorite build is probably Grixis Twin. I think the removal is very, very good there. I like it a lot.
So... What? Was the deck too good? Like, we're talking about all these very different decks, and, like, was it too good? Did it need to be banned, Manny?
I don't think so. Like, don't get me wrong, like, I used to lose to that deck as much as the next guy. Sometimes you get it, you know, three rounds in a row online, and you're just like, man, this is my life. But I think it played a very important role in the meta, and I'm very sad it's gone. And I'm very sad that I don't get a chance to really master it or play it more than I did.
Yeah, I thought that it, like, I think that... It's funny, like, a lot of the arguments that I hear about it is like, oh, it was, like, too good, like, everybody just played it, and it's like, does anybody say that about Delver in Legacy?
I think the problem...
They don't.
No, like...
Like, Legacy has these staples that, like, will exist forever, and people are fine with it. Why aren't they okay with that in Modern?
I think part of the problem with...
It's because it's a proto format.
It's a casual format.
Yeah. That's really honestly, that is what it is. Like, you look at, like, Modern decks at large, like... But people's favorite Modern decks, like, if you go to a store Modern tournament, you might play against, like, five decks you've ever seen before, and there's 18 decks you've, like, or with cards you've never heard of before. You know what I mean? Like, people really do come out of the woodworks to play Modern, because we talked about it on this show before, like, oh, I have this casual deck that I've been playing with my friend, it's not standard legal, but I can cut these two cards to make it Modern legal, and then I'll take this to my store's Modern event. So, people... I mean, that's a huge block of the Modern player base.
I would say just don't have a Modern Pro Tour. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
We don't enjoy Modern PPDQ season. They don't enjoy playing it. Like, cut it.
I think cut the Modern Pro Tour. Let's add a Legacy one. We're all good.
Yeah, I think this last Modern Pro Tour just kind of really showcased that maybe the format isn't exactly what we're looking for PTs. Like, it didn't... Like, nobody had fun watching it. Nobody... You know, no one was like, oh man, I can't wait for the next Modern Pro Tour. It was just kind of a thing that happened.
Nobody's
and now,
ever like, I wish all the Pro Tours were Modern.
Yeah,
like,
it's just
nobody
like...
Ever,
I mean,
there are definitely people who have said that.
I'm sure that there are. I also wouldn't like all the Pro Tours to be standard, though, to be fair. Like,
what?
I mean, don't you think that would be...
No, but I mean, there were fun things before. They just didn't generate a lot of buzz.
But you
like,
and
block,
I like Block
a lot. Like,
Block
Constructed, yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah,
I can't believe
they
didn't
that. I think that was a great format. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, everybody I've ever talked to is like Block Constructed, too. I just don't even know where the incentive was to be
like,
oh,
let's
just get out of it. Yeah, I guess with the two block sets is why.
They could do something different. It could be like two Block Constructed,
right,
instead of like...
Sure, yeah.
Which
if it was, like, four
set.
Sets, yeah, it'd be, like, small standard. I mean, that'd be the issue, right? It'd be, like, small standard.
Yeah. It'd be slightly weird standard.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't sound great.
Yeah.
They should just do extended. Let's bring extended back. I could go for some super standard.
I mean, I'm all about extended too. Mark Rosewater says that there are going to be more constructed formats to come out, so stay tuned for that.
Eternal, I hope.
I don't think that's that's not going to be a format.
So I do believe that at some point there is going to be a no reserve list, like anything else goes format. I hope it's not called Eternal because that's just a stupid name.
It would be confusing.
It'd be very confusing.
It's extremely confusing, yeah, because people describe Vintage, Legacy, and sometimes Modern as Eternal format, so it'd be like just
Legacy minus BNR.
Right. Anyway.
Okay, let's go on to Matt. You actually disagree with Manny, though. You actually think that it did need to be banned.
I don't know that it necessarily needed to be banned, but I do think that it made the format rather stagnant. I think that people would just, especially like if anybody played blue and didn't play modern before, they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to play Splinter Twin, you know, because I like blue, I like the things that this deck is doing.
Do you think that the bannings of things like Pod and Bloodbred Elf and Deathrite Shaman did that, though, more than Splinter Twin existing?
Sure, yeah, I guess, I mean, when you ban everything of the equal power level till it becomes the best deck, right? Like,
right,
that's been basically their strategy in all of Modern. They're like, ban everything until there's, like, one deck that's way better than all the others, and then ban that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, Seething Song, like, there's, I mean,
right.
At one point it was, which do you play, Twin or Storm, right? And then it was, well, can't play Storm.
Then yeah, they made Storm, like, into a comedy, whereas, like, you just feel so...
Isn't it more like a tragedy? Probably
yeah.
Not a comedy.
Well, it's like watching somebody try to play it is like somebody trying to walk across ice in their shoes, where it's like, no, I hope you get there, but you're probably not going to make it.
So, yeah, I think that when I look at all of this, it's like, first of all, it's really fun to, like, look back at, like... Because there are standard formats where I, like, look back at decks and I'm like, ugh. People played that? We played that? Why didn't we play that?
Yeah, certainly never thought that about Zendikar Standard, though.
No, never. Never. I was like, man, what a sweet life we lived.
I think, like, when we go
turn
back...
one, the quest for the Holy Relic, go. Like, that'll go down in my memory banks forever.
Yeah. I feel like nobody's going to go back and look at Mono Blue Devotion, that one approach, and be like, man, what a great deck.
I don't know if that's true. I might go back and like look at Mono Blue is one
that people,
I think
a lot of people.
I think that you'll go back and be like,
fondly.
Man, Frostburn weird. What a card.
I mean, that
yeah.
deck was a blast to play, but like there
wasn't
a good
great
card
deck,
in it.
Though, yeah.
I mean, it didn't need one, right?
It's true.
I mean, Thassa God of the Sea is a great card.
Yeah. The Nykthos, Shrine to Nyx is like
sure.
The deck that won the Pro Tour wasn't even playing that.
Yeah, I don't think most of the Mono Blue decks were playing it towards the end either.
Yeah. But
and it was only the then Team Star City games. Forever after Team Channel Fireball Pantheon.
Yeah.
Well, that team's now like TCG player, but.
Well, the people that were on the team, but the team
yeah.
itself devolved into
sure.
Channel Fireball to Pantheon.
Yeah.
What did we learn from this? So I wrote down a few things. The first thing is to keep an open mind. The number of people that were like, Splinter Twin can't work, like, it's just a bad enchantment on a bad creature, like, it's
yeah.
whatever.
It's an aura that costs 4 mana.
Yeah, there were certainly some naysayers about it.
All of us were
good
naysayers.
Reason. Yeah.
You know, just keep an open mind about things. Like, I mean, Fate Stitcher, like, broke Modern for a weekend. Like, anything can happen, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Testing is important. If you had never played against this deck, you were gonna lose to it. So, playtest more. Like, I would have lost a Splinter Twin every time if I had never playtested against it. And in Standard. And it's important. Like,
certainly, it's especially important to test against decks that are a little bit more not what you're used to playing against. Like, testing against the mid-range decks that are just, like, good cards all the time is, like, good. You should be playing Magic and you should learn how to play against these decks, but it's not going to be as important as playing against something that's completely off the beaten path, like Rally or Splinter Twin or something where you have to interact very differently.
Yeah. So, don't forget to do your job and, like, do your homework and play some matches of Magic. The last one is innovation. Like, these decks, like, were so different from each other. You know? Like, one of them's this Inferno Titan Splinter Twin deck. One of them's this, like, one of them's, like, this straight combo deck. One of them's Twin Pod, Twin Blade, Tarmo Twin. Like, these decks are so different from each other. And they all, like, did well at events. So, you know, in your job of keeping an open mind, like, Maybe you can break it. Like,
and
yeah.
Even
I look at you, man. He pointed at himself. He's like, oh,
yeah.
Me? I could do it.
I could do it.
You could. So keep all those things in mind. Like, I'm always going to probably have, like, a really soft spot in my heart for Deceiver Exarch and, like, kind of what it did. I mean, I played it in Rug Pod, I played it in Twin Pod, I played it in Bant Pod. A lot of pods. Yeah. I don't know that I ever played Splinter Twin, like, straight Splinter Twin in an event. I mean, I playtested tons of it, but, like...
Yeah. Well, and, like, this deck also, so I always felt like Splinter Twin was always, like, it was always my second choice for every modern event I ever played in, it felt like. It was always like, oh, either play this or Splinter Twin.
You were
and
so
like,
wrong. That should have been first.
Yeah, and
like, you should have been like, why should I not play Splinter
right,
Twin?
Right, and I only actually played Splinter Twin once, because it was it always felt like it would be available, where I was always like, but then just all of a sudden it wasn't. And I was like, man, I should have played Splinter Twin so many times.
Yeah, I think I'll always look back and, like, just learning to keep an open mind. Matt will always remember the times that he got to play Jace the Mind Sculptor and Splinter Twin in the same event.
Yep, pretty good times.
But, yeah, anything else anyone has to say? Like, man, like, it's only been, like, a month and we're already, like, reminiscing the fall of, no.
Back in the good days.
Yeah. Manny?
Yeah, I mean, I miss tapping out and losing like a chump. Just Splinter Twin. I wish it was back.
I wish I could lose that way again.
I wish I didn't have to worry about turn two Reality Smashers and like 19 Eldrazi Mimics and other stupid things.
All right, well, that's it for this week. You can join our clan on MTGO by messaging me on MTGO, Spencer13Dev, D-E-V. You can message Quentin at Earthstripe, U-R-S-T-R-Y-P.
Oh my gosh, you did it without me. I'm so proud of you.
You can mess it. You know, the clan is growing a little bit. We will be updating the Patreon page as soon as possible. We just have to have time to, like, sit down and really, like... We're giving so much of it away for free that we wanted to be paid for that we, like, now have to come up with new benefits.
Idiots.
But, yeah. The next goal is a podcast episode. So at $150 a month, we'll be giving out an episode... just to the patrons of the show. Don't forget that you can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Halland or on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find Manny at
Manny on Twitter, Manny underscore CCMTG, or on Facebook, Manuel Morez.
You can find the podcast at CCMTG or join the Constructive Criticism Facebook group, or just like us on Facebook. So, Matt, where can people find you if they want to talk to you about all the their love for Stoneforge Mystic?
Nobody wants to talk to Matt.
You can all thank me for breaking the modern format as well while you're at it. You can find
me. We gave you credit for that last week.
I listened to some of the podcasts. I couldn't find that part, but
I mean, we like it was like a 10-minute segment.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
We also said Andrew Tandrum was cute though. So
yeah, that's good. That's a good point. He's kind of a dreamboat. So. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at the Witch Cling, or you can find me on Facebook. Just my first and last name. So.
Casey?
You can find me on Facebook, Casey Tuna Bloodworth, or Twitter, at CC Bloodthirst.
Awesome.
Do you know how many times I've thought that your middle name was Tuna? Like, yeah. I forget that, like, all the time.
You forget that his middle name is not Tuna?
Yeah.
I ask him about it, but he won't tell me. I don't know why it's there.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you about it after the show.
That's true. Always
not,
say.
Not show appropriate.
All right. Yeah. I'll share it with the Facebook.
Anyway, so don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review if you get the chance. And shout out to Tim H. He's one of the podcast listeners. He took 12th at the GP today. What?
I was just gonna say, yeah, like dudes did amazing. We're all like way proud of him.
Crushed it with Black Red Dragons. Huge group of people rooting for him. His goal this year was to get his first pro point, and he got it today. And
super awesome. That's such a
congratulations to him. You know, working hard, like shooting his Black Red Dragons list and getting in there. So, and then I just want to give a shout out to like the whole Facebook group. I wrote this early today while I was on Painkiller, so I'm gonna try and read it, and hopefully it doesn't sound insane.
This is where the crash comes.
Now, my throat just hurts from the tube still. They put in it. Jerks.
Sounds painful.
Yeah, saving your life. What jerks? What buttholes?
Those inconsiderate
doctors. I can't believe they went to the trouble to save your life.
Okay, so I put... this is what I wrote, and I just wanted to kind of share it with people who aren't in the Facebook group, but it kind of just goes for like the Twitter community, the people who reach out to us on Reddit and email and things like that, but... I said, it brings me close to tears, the kind of community that I've created here with Constructive Criticism. On episode 13, we had a show with John Finkel where we talked about surrounding yourself with greatness. Later on in the cast, so, you know, later episodes down the line, I came to the conclusion that one of the most important things in magic is surrounding yourself with similar-minded people. I can honestly say that this group, you know, the people that we have around us, they do so much to lift each other and help one another in the quest for hashtag always improving. It's so easy to think that the other person is, quote, just wrong or isn't as good as you because they think a certain card is better or worse than you do. But instead of getting that way, we have a group that consistently tries to be better than they were the day before and help others along the way also. There are many times where I don't agree with somebody about something that is said, but I never feel like it's an argument, and I never feel like an argument is about to break out. Instead, they give their point of view, and they do what they can to learn from the experience. It's so different from other experiences I've had on the internet, you know, whether it's Reddit or other terrible Facebook groups, where it's just fighting and insulting and it's a horrible thing. I can't believe the number of always improving moments that are posted and the support and love that the listeners show each other. Thank you, everybody, and for what you bring, and please let me know if there's anything I can ever personally do to help you grow as a person or a Magic player. I actually love the Facebook group a lot, and it was really cool this you know, to see so many people supporting Tim and like just how much they support each other. Like,
yeah, it's awesome.
They like really care if they're like top beating GPTs or like winning their FNMs or like whatever it is that they're doing. Like, whether it's all the way down to like FNM, all the way up to like taking 12th at a GP. Like,
for sure,
they're really excited for each other and they really want everyone to succeed in that group. And that is so different than the other Facebook groups we're in.
Whenever I see a post in that group, it always feels like I'm in like an episode of Cheers, where like everybody, you know, these people are like from all over the world. Like, they all know each other. They know, like, oh, you know, how's your Black Red Dragons doing? It's like, oh, how's your kids doing? You know, like, it's a very, like, tight-knit community,
which I really love to see. I've never seen on an internet group somebody not insult somebody's intelligence or, like, their derogatory terms about their sexuality. Like, I've never seen that once.
it's amazing.
Like, it's not even the internet. It's awesome.
It's that mindset of, like, always improving and, like, I don't know. I just can't believe that, like, this is something that I created. And I just want to thank everybody that's in the group. And if you're not in the group, we have people that have created Facebook accounts just to join this group. If you do that, just message me on Facebook. Let me know that that's what you're doing, because I'm unlikely to add you.
Yeah, we think you might be a bot.
Yeah. So
apparently, like, ISIS tried to do some recruiting on there not too long ago.
You got to be vigilant.
Yeah.
Like.
Anyway, but yeah, so if you haven't joined that group, join it. It's like, it's the best place on the internet for me right now, and it makes me like super happy to see all the time. So none of these nerds have any shoutouts unless somebody
thought of one. I do have one. Yeah, Scott Porosky. Thank you for my shrine. I want to say that that's a good start, and we'll build up from there.
And this is also something that's happened since we talked about it, but shout out to Owen Turtenwald for becoming a 4-time Grand Prix champion.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Taking it down with Rally of the Ancestors.
Oh, I was gonna say something to Owen today. Owen is, like, the best Magic player ever, right?
Obviously.
Like, not even right now. I think he might actually just be the best ever.
That's where it's hard, right?
Because, like, it's so much harder to win now than it was when Kai was doing it.
There's a lot more people playing.
I mean, it's so hard to be giving him this much credit, though. He's only got 3 Pro Tour Top 8s. I mean, I think he's the best Magic player right now, for sure, but...
So, I mean, that's like saying 1 Pro Tour Top 8 now is worth, like, 4, like, 10 years ago, or whatever.
I mean, even then, Finkel's beating him, right? Even if that were the case.
That's very true.
Finkel's got 14 Pro Tour Top 8s.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. With 3 wins, like, Owen is very good, and his play is technically, like, very close to perfect.
I don't know. And that's the thing. That's what I was saying is, like, when I watch John play, it's like, wow, John Finkel is, like, really good at Magic.
Yeah.
But, like, when I watch Owen play, I'm like, man, I'm really bad at Magic.
I agree. I had that feeling today watching him play Rally. I was like, well, I don't even know how to play this deck, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. which it's super weird with Owen. It's, like, very calculated. Like, occasionally, like, if you look back at, like, the great, historic players, like, you'll see something like a stroke of genius where it's like, wow, like, I don't even know, like, how you would have the guts to make a play like that. Where with Owen, it's like super precise, technical play.
What you're trying to say is he channels the Terminator.
Yes.
Cool.
All right.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, shout out to Owen. We all think you're great. All right. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. Every week you can tweet with the hashtag would that be good.
Which one is it? It's not always improving.
Nope.
It's the other one.
Hashtag would that be good.
Why does the other one have a hashtag then if we never use the hashtag?
We do.
It's complicated, Manny.
Oh my gosh.
One of them is for questions and one of them is for ways that you've improved.
One of them is for bragging. The other one is for asking questions.
But either way, they both go on Twitter.
I mean, they can.
Okay. I'm just going to start like combining my brags with my questions.
Okay.
Sweet.
The Matt says, MTGO sealed leaks, hashtag would that be good. I actually jumped up and down cheering when I saw sealed leaks were coming to MTGO. I'm really excited about it.
You were still fresh and out of surgery at this point, and you should not be jumping up and down.
I was actually right before I went into the surgery when this was announced.
Oh, and then you were like, oh, I need to go to the doctor. Sure, sure.
Actually, I hurt really bad right now. Like, really bad. No, it's okay. Vinny Gorman says, oh, Matt, what do you think about sealed leaks?
Yeah, it seems exciting to me. I mean, I wish that there were a way to do draft leagues, but sealed is acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, you just can play, like, more... The thing that I like about it is I can play more limited matches at, like, times when I can play Magic. Because, like, the problem with drafts is, like, you have to, like, set apart, like, a part of your day to play draft, right? Mm-hmm. And I love limited Magic, like, more than constructed Magic. And now I'll just get to play more limited Magic. I mean, I'm really excited about it.
Yep.
Well, I don't get to draft as much. I mean, I guess I could probably draft the same amount, but I don't know. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and it's really cool. It's something that was missing from leagues, so it's a really great addition.
Yeah, I think it's basically impossible for them to add something that's going to make the game worse without, like, taking something away, you know what I mean? They're just strictly adding stuff that's just value, right?
Yeah.
See, Momir leagues now. We're in business.
Yeah. I mean, assuming it doesn't, like, split players' attentions, right? Like, you need things to fire, but...
LMAO, that made my day. Affinity Eldrazi, hashtag, would that be good? I don't know.
Not terribly surprising, so...
Whatever.
Yeah, it was... If you look at, like, the...
Yeah, it was a thread.
It was a joke. It's not, like, a real thing that exists.
Yeah, it's a thread that was, like, a picture of MTGO stats.
I see.
Pictures of, like...
Yeah, it was like blue, red, white. Eldrazi, blue, mono blue, and
yeah,
Eldrazi,
every
green,
color
Eldrazi.
Combination. Eldrazi, Tron, and then somebody's like, Affinity Eldrazi, and it's like, well.
Oh, I see. I thought that they were saying Affinity versus Eldrazi, like the finals or whatever.
No,
it's
like
they're
like,
talking about
what
called
like,
Affinity Eldrazi.
Yeah. I don't think that would be a thing. I don't even know why we call Affinity. I hate the name Robots, so I do it because I hate the name Robots.
Well, exactly. If you had to pick a name for it, what would it be? Right? Like, it's just there, and it sounds fine. You wouldn't be
like
five-color
Terminators.
You spend a lot of time thinking about the names of Magic decks.
So much.
You guys are the ones that talk about it longer.
No,
I just said I don't like the name.
It's because they bother you, and I want to solve it once and for all and get rid of this problem.
The only reason I even brought up the first one was because you were calling it something different than what everybody else calls it, and I wanted
to
make sure the listeners
know. Everybody else calls
it
something different.
Well,
every single person calls it Mardu Green. You know, like, they call it Mardu Green. Abzan
Red.
Today on coverage, they called it Jund White. And it's like... It's like, let's call it what it was called, or Dark Naya is another one that they called it, and it's like, this deck already had a deck name. Why are we changing the deck name?
Because it's fun.
I don't know. Anyway, more deck name conversations.
Oh yeah, Affinity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really...
Artifacts.
I don't really even like Affinity, so I don't really care if Eldrazi and Affinity become one deck.
It doesn't feel functional. Like... How are you ever going to have enough, like, a meaningful amount of artifacts if you're playing Thought on Seers and...
Yeah, that's my thought. Like, those cranial platings get real bad. I mean,
yeah.
Just, like, Ghost Fireblaze, I don't know.
I mean, it
doesn't seem great.
It feels like a different thing at some point.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound particularly good.
Your Glimmer Voids seem poor in this deck, too.
I mean, you could do it in Legacy, perhaps, with the Soul Lands, right? Like, I mean, the Affinity decks in Legacy already play, like, Ancient Tombs and stuff like that, so it's not that hard to believe that you could just, like, play a couple Thought Knot Seers and some Reality Smashers at the top end of your Affinity deck. But.
Sure.
Yeah.
Building a shrine
good,
to appease the fickle god that is Manny CCMTG's ego. Hashtag, would that be good? Obviously not.
Obviously it's the best.
Shame on you.
Yeah.
Don't encourage this behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, if nobody stops me, I will try to form a cult.
If nobody stops
me.
What?
Like, sounds like you're at one and counting.
That's where you start.
Yeah, you gotta
start somewhere.
The ball has begun to roll.
It's just word of mouth from that point.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys all next week, and yeah, have a great day.
See ya.
See ya.
Magic, magic, magic.